Hello, welcome back, everybody. This is Gamer Heroes Podcast with GGKC. I think we're on episode 71. Episode title TBD, and that's now definitely going to be the title.
Yeah,
right?
It's definitely the title.
We got John, Mike, and Thomas here today.
Hello.
No Josh. So, how's everyone's weekend been?
Good.
Yeah.
Dude, I've been playing Darkest Dungeon a little bit. That game has, there we go, that's much better. I've been playing Darkest Dungeon, and there are so many quality of life improvements that have happened since the last time I really spent time in that game. Man, it's good stuff. You know, when the game first came out, like right when it was released on PS4, which was a port, it was good, but clearly it was lagging behind. You know, it was like when Minecraft was always way behind the PC version. Well, they fixed stuff while I was playing it, but I dropped off it. I mean, that was like a year or so ago, maybe. And now there are little ability changes that make a lot more sense. That, you know, you think it could have been that way, but it didn't explicitly tell you. But now you can see stuff like when you get buffs and debuffs on your characters, you don't just have to know what they are. You don't have to figure it out. You can actually highlight it, which seems like a thing that should have existed a while ago, but it's wonderful to have now. I mean, the game is much more polished. So I'm probably going to buy the DLC for that, actually, just to see what else there is, because I know with how much fun I'm having again with it, I'll probably end up spending a whole bunch of time with it. So.
Does anyone know if that ended up coming out for Xbox? Or is it PC and PS4?
I don't know if it came out on Xbox. I have it for PC, so once I got it for PC, I never even...
I've seen it on Humble Bundles every once in a while, and I keep meaning to pick it up in a group of games, but
I'm pretty sure I got it in a Humble Bundle.
Yeah. I regret not doing that.
It's a super fun game.
Yeah.
It's it can get pretty difficult though, but I always enjoy it.
It doesn't scare me. I still haven't beat Dead Cells though, so I don't know if I can pick up any more games that'll just stretch on out forever.
Man, my backlog is going to be huge. I'm still considering buying Fallout 76 now that the reviews actually seem way better than they seemed a couple weeks before the release. Thinking about getting that, and then I was once upon a time thinking about getting Marvel Spider-Man, but geez, I don't have time for this stuff.
Yeah,
I'm not hardly even playing Red Dead because I'm playing Darkest Dungeon again. You know, 3-year-old game.
Well, I have been playing Red Dead. I just picked it up on Friday. Because you know, with work travel and whatnot, I didn't really have any time to devote to it. But here, going on the holiday weekend, I you know felt like I had good chunks of time to work on it, and it's been awesome so far. I definitely have a few things I don't like about it, primarily being it's not always clear what button I should be hitting to do something. Case in point, there was a mission where I needed to steal a stagecoach from a house, and the NPC with me said, you know, hey, let's get out our binoculars and scope out the house. So we get out the binoculars, and then I figured, well, if I'm holding this item in my hand, it's the trigger button to use it,
right?
But it's not. And so that, of course, pulled out my gun and shot at the house, and I, you know,
right,
and I woke everybody up because it was like at night and everybody was asleep and yada yada. So ended up failing the mission. I got to redo it and it was fine. It also that sort of, but you know, not, it was like, well, how do I actually use these binoculars? And that's sort of the second thing is like, I don't really think there's a lot of consequences, right? So like, you fail something, you die, you start it again. I mean, it's really not.
Well, I know I got a pretty big bounty a while ago. I thought I got all the witnesses because I just wanted to see what it was like to steal somebody's horse, like, on the road. And, spiraled out of control, and I had a big-ass bounty. And it was almost all the money that I had. So if I, you know, it was like $95 for one place and then $15 for the place next door. And, I don't know what I would have done if I didn't have all that money. And that's a lot of money. Mm-hmm. You know, one bounty quest gives you like $20.
Yeah.
One of my friends, he picked it up and he hates the game because he started the game, died a million times, which is funny to me.
Yeah.
And then got a huge bounty and now he can't go in town to do any quests because everybody just killed him. And I'm like, this is the same guy who played No Man's Sky with us and fell into a cave that had no exit.
So maybe it's not the game. It's
just him. Yeah, so honestly, he's telling me this, and I'm like, you know, I'm not even surprised. but yeah, it's definitely got some jank on it. Cause, I wish there should be like a, hey, you're about to pull out your weapon. Are you sure?
Mm-hmm.
Kind of thing, because, boy, you'd just start shooting real quick.
Well, I guess it allows for the sort of firing from the hip, but, like, do you ever use that? Is there ever a time you're not aiming, right? Is there ever a time you're not doing left trigger, right trigger?
Can you even hip fire?
Yeah, that's what keeps happening to me. Over and over, I keep hip firing.
Yeah.
It's completely on accident, and it's just my gun goes off, and occasionally I hit things. Yeah, it's
video games, am I right?
Yeah. Oh, man. Why are they making me shoot all these people?
Oh, Axel, sorry.
Yeah, but in general, loved it. The environments, you know, everything that everybody's heard about the game is true. Environments are just fantastically beautiful. And, mm-hmm. You know, the fast travel is, it makes sense for the game. It's not game-breaking in any sense. Just take a train, basically. And although I will say it is kind of funny how your horse just teleports to wherever you are.
Yeah.
It's like if you hop on a train or a stagecoach, the horse is just there waiting for you. And I'm like, if I knew this horse had this power, I would have just taken the horse. Like, if I had a teleporting horse, then I'm not going to pay to take the stagecoach. But
maybe the horse was riding on top of the train.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, that's the most logical answer.
Absolutely.
But it's fun. It's fun. It also can be a little jarring, the transition from environment to environment. Because, you know, they've crammed, like, every type of environment into the game, right? From snowy mountaintops.
Yeah, they crammed, like, everything from Kansas to California.
Yes, and swamps, right?
Yeah.
So I'm, like, riding through the desert, and all of a sudden I'm in a swamp, and I'm like, I know I was just in the mountains a few minutes ago, so this is a little strange. Now I'm in the bayou, but it's cool to see him do it. I have seen pictures of people get attacked by alligators, so yeah, I'm ready for that.
I saw somebody tie a guy up and feed him to the gators. It's like, man, that is metal.
Wow. Yeah. I didn't know you could do that. That's hilarious. Yeah. Lassoing's funny. I did not expect that.
Yeah.
Probably should have. Definitely that first mission where they take you to do the bear hunt. I got rocked by the bear.
Oh, me too.
Yeah.
Got rocked by the bear. And now, ignored the woman because I wanted to take the belt. Mm-hmm. And then I died and lost the belt anyway. So.
Yeah. I guess once you fail one attempt at a legendary animal, they disappear for a while. So you can't just keep trying over and over. Yeah.
Yeah. But they do come back, I've read. Yeah. So hopefully I can actually get that belt someday. But we'll see.
So, it's Red Dead. I think everybody knows what they're getting into with that at this point.
Yeah.
There's been enough coverage.
I was listening to Giant Bomb this past week, and one of the guys was saying what I agree with. Like, Red Dead's fun. I think it's a good game. Definitely got that jank on it. But I think people's calls for, like, oh, game of the year. I'm like, maybe not.
Yeah.
It's a good game, but, like, you know, when you take something that's as polished as, like, God of War, mm-hmm. or any of those other big contenders, Spider-Man,
mm-hmm.
all that stuff. Yeah, I mean, Red Dead's going to have a good zeitgeist here for a while, but I don't think, to me, I don't think it deserves to be game of the year material necessarily.
In the first one kind of had this crazy following, you know, that just really built it up to be something that when it came out, it wasn't necessarily, I mean, it was always considered a good game. But over time, it kind of got this, like, fever pitch of, oh, we need another Red Dead because the first one was so amazing. But I don't know. It was a good game. It's just, I don't know if it was that level.
Yeah. Well, Rockstar's even said, like, they don't know what they're going to do for GTA 6.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, their explanation is that in the political climate we have, satire doesn't really do anything when, like, reality is crazier than your satire. Because, like, GTA 5 existed because we still lived in a world where, like, you listen to this stuff and you're like, oh, yeah, this is satire because it's just a little too extreme. But now you listen to, like, actual real news and you're like, mm-hmm. shit, is this real? Is this an Onion article? You know, so
I have a great idea for him. And Rockstar, you can make the checks out to cash. DM me. I'll shoot you my address. There but make it in like an Idiocracy style like universe. Wouldn't that be hilarious? Yeah. That'd be an amazing game. People would eat it up.
That sound, that honestly sounds like that's a job for like the Crackdown guys or Saints Row.
Probably. I don't know. I mean, if you look at GTA, they definitely had, I mean, exactly what you were saying. It's basically just making fun of, it's satirizing, you know.
Americana.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that taking a step further and saying, okay, here's what we will become. Yeah. Yeah.
I can dig it.
Well, so we started a board game in our office this past week.
Oh, yeah. I saw that. The Risk Legacy?
Risk Legacy. Wanted a little, you know, wanted a board game that we could try to set up that people could sort of take turns as needed. That didn't work out really well. Didn't really think it through. Because Risk, you definitely need almost all parties there, and especially this version of the game. But it has been really fun. Everyone's super engaged. I think we pulled in a couple people who, maybe wouldn't typically play board games like this. And yeah, it's been pretty engaging. Probably a little more time consuming than we anticipated.
Yeah. I mean, Risk isn't a quick game.
No. I think you kind of like forget how much strategy is involved with it and how much time you just have to like stare at the board to get an idea of like what your next move is. But it is pretty cool. Like there's some additions to the game where like there are hidden folders inside of the game board where, like, you're not allowed to open them and look at the cards on the inside until you reach certain points in the game. So there's some interesting stuff to it. Anybody who's played, like, Pandemic Legacy or really any of the other Legacy games will know. We'll kind of have an idea of what that's like. But it's pretty exciting. It's fun. I always liked Risk anyway, even though I know that the original idea around Risk is pretty basic, just... You have your troops on the board, and then you roll dice, and whoever rolls higher wins, and game over. But it still feels like a Risk game. It just adds in a lot of stuff. Like, everybody picks a faction, so that's new. And the factions all have different special abilities. So, like, one of the factions, every new turn when you're generating your troops, you generate troops like you normally would if you were playing regular Risk, but maybe one of the factions lets you have an extra troop spawn on your headquarters, and every faction has a headquarters. So when you start the game, your starting spot is where you drop your headquarters and your starting troops start. So it's interesting. There's enough new stuff in the game where it feels like I'm playing a new game, but it still feels familiar. So I'm having a lot of fun with it.
Yeah.
But you play like 15 games of it. So I think we're through one game right now. So we've got a lot of time before we'll wrap this up. Yep. But
yeah. But I mean, I would certainly recommend it for anybody looking for, I mean, it's pretty accessible, you know. I mean, it's basically the core Risk rules plus a little bit. It doesn't do a lot to upset how Risk is played, right? The special abilities are probably the biggest wrinkle. And a few other things, but especially in the first few rounds, it's very, very much just Risk. But
the only gripe I have with it is that I feel like I wish I felt like all of the faction special abilities were on par with each other.
Yeah.
But then again, every round, so every time you finish a game of the 15 games, each player has a roll off and you can change your faction. So I guess maybe it doesn't matter that much. Maybe there's supposed to be some factions with a little bit worse of a power, and because the other factions are just going to picked up first anyway. But I don't know. It could also be just how we picked the special powers.
Yeah, and we'll be. I think we'll be adding special powers to the various factions as we go. Additional powers. So I would imagine those that are a little bit less useful now will balance out as we go.
I guess I forgot about those extra spaces. Yeah, there's
a bunch of extra spaces.
Yeah.
There's like, we're using one of six or something.
That'll be fun. It sucks that after you finish the game, you kind of just toss it. Like, there isn't really anything else to do with the game. But At the same time, even some of my favorite board games I haven't played 15 times, you know, so maybe it's...
Thomas, have you played any of the Legacy, like Pandemic Legacy? So they, you permanently mark up the game, so and it can't be played again.
Oh.
Yeah.
All right.
So it's like a $60 game, and it's a single playthrough. And it's a long playthrough, and it's meant to be visited over multiple sessions. But there are techniques you can use, like, you know, homemade game pieces and stuff, to not have to do this. But we went down the road of exploring that for this, and it's just like, oh, it's just going to be too much work. And then, like, all these people who are new to this aren't necessarily going to understand what we're trying to do with this. And, like, you know, it's just a pain.
Yeah.
So, but it can be done for the people who really want to.
That's remarkable. Yeah. You could say there's a lot of risk involved in that. Okay, all right.
I honestly feel like this is the best way to play this game is in an office setting. You know, it's not like you set it up with some friends who maybe by the time you're at game six or something become unreliable and you're not going to be able to, like, finish it up. But, I mean, if we're playing it in the office and everybody's here every day anyway, it'll be a lot easier to actually get through it.
Yeah, we've never had anyone leave. So that's good. Yeah. Do you guys know what Artifact is?
I do not.
Artifact is Valve's first new game in like 10 years or whatever. Not 10 years, but in a while. Maybe 10 years?
Maybe.
I don't know. And it's a card game. Oh. Right, this is the thing that they announced at some either esports something or gaming convention, or I don't remember what it was, but and their audience just booed the heck out of them. Yeah. All Valve fans, right?
People hate mobile games, dude.
Well, it's not even, I don't even think it's necessarily mobile. It's like,
I guess I just assume it is.
It probably is. I don't even know, but it's more desktop focused right now. It's actually, they don't want the cash grab, right? It's very obvious. And so it's become more obvious. So you've played Hearthstone, right? All right. So Hearthstone, you know, has certain mechanics that allow you to play the game, right? Even if you never spend a dollar. Artifact is, and it's receiving a lot of criticism right now because of this. So that's why I'm bringing it up. Artifact is basically the opposite. There is not a free way to play this game. I mean, there will be some very limited once you buy it. So number one, the game's $20. So just to even get in. That comes with booster packs, right? The dollar equivalent of booster packs. So you're buying cards. So it's not like you're just out money. But the entire game is going to be based around buying more cards. There isn't even, from my understanding, and necessarily a way to really construct a full deck or play without buying more. Additionally, you know how in Hearthstone you have your arena runs, right? And you can use gold that you earn through the game or pay a dollar or whatever it is. Apparently, Artifacts, one of their biggest game modes, is going to basically be arena. It's a dollar per play. There's no gold system, so there's no way to earn it. So you just have to pay money to play through the arena run.
It's a fucking slot machine.
Well, if you make it far enough in arena, you can get another free run. That's the only way.
Yeah, but that's hard. If that was easy.
And it's two deaths until you get knocked out, not three like Hearthstone.
Okay, well, I'm going to keep playing Hearthstone.
Yeah, so there's a lot of fan outrage around this right now. And I don't know. I have two thoughts. I'm like, yeah, I don't think I want to play that game.
Yeah.
And then my second thought is, but a ton of people are still going to play it. Yeah. Right? So, like, all this outrage, this is made for people who want to spend money on a game. Right? Like, this is not made for people who want to
free-to-play. It better be good, you know?
The beta testers or whatever are saying the game is pretty good. But
I guess
I'm not going to pay into it just to, like, you know, because there's not really, like, an entry level, right? Like, for a card game, you got to build the best deck. You got to get the best cards. So that means you're buying all the boosters or whatever until you get there. So, you know, you're $100 in or whatever before you can even really compete.
Yeah, I had a friend asking me about Hearthstone last week because he wants to play a mobile card game, but he hasn't sunk any time into anyone. So I mentioned Magic the Gathering that you guys have talked about. And then I told him about Hearthstone, where Like, I'm a very casual player. I'll play it a lot for a little bit of time, and then I'll put it down for a while. And so for me, like, my decks always suck. Like, they're fun, but I'm certainly not climbing the ladder or anything. I just like the Tavern Brawl and stuff. So I've recently picked up the Arena where I can, I have a huge amount of gold stockpiled because I never spend it all when an expansion comes out because I know I'm not going to play it that long. So even if I build a pretty good deck or you know, buy a bunch of packs, it's not going to pay off. Like, not unless I really commit to doing it, and I haven't committed. So anyway, he was like, well, is there a way that I can play? Is it going to suck if I don't have any good cards? I was like, well, do what I do because I don't have that many good cards, and just do the Arena, and you're going to lose a lot for a long time, but you're going to be able to play all these cards you don't have. You're going to play against decks that you don't normally see. So it's not just like the meta that, you know, whoever has the best cards wins. This is like, you could start a brand new account and look up Arena strategies online and do very well, even as a new player. Like, if I actually did my homework, I could do a lot better than I do now, but I don't. So if this guy gets on as a new, you know, never played the game before, does his research, because there are a bunch of things, especially if you're playing on PC, there are tools like UI tools that can help you basically do all the math and stuff.
Yeah, there's deck building assistance and all sorts of stuff.
Yeah, so I told him he should look into that before he tries to spend any time with it, because he's going to lose for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
But once he gets good at it, the rewards are humongous once you start doing well in there.
Hmm.
So, you know, that offers a cool way to build a deck without having to spend money. But if your game doesn't even have that,
mm-hmm.
and you have to pay, so like Hearthstone, it's $1.50 or the currency.
Yeah.
Well, I just use currency. Yeah. You know, but if I didn't have that option, I'm like, shit, I don't want to pay. Like, if it's like the Arena where I'm going to plan on losing for a while,
yeah,
you know, I don't want to pay, you know, dollar after dollar to know that I'm going to lose.
Yeah.
Well, and apparently you buy them in packs of five, so you can't just buy one either. It's $5 every time you want to play the game, basically. Yeah, it's interesting.
It better be good. I mean, if it's good, then it can be worth it. But I don't feel very good.
Think about how much money you could potentially spend. I mean, think about something like WoW, right? $15 a month or whatever, and you get access to this game, and you can play it as much or as little as you want. This, you sit down for one gaming session, you may blow $15 in an hour, right? And then you are SOL unless you've either done really well or I guess, yeah, that's it. That's the only way, is to get really good. So, I mean, you're looking at like a minimum commitment of a ton of money just to get started. And then unless you're good, you're looking at a crazy amount per month just to keep playing.
Plus, I've played a lot of card games, but at the end of the day, I don't think that there's any card game that is ever going to be that much better than one of the greatest card games that has been around for a really long time, Magic the Gathering, right? Like, you can come out with an innovative, really fun card game. But, I mean, I would be pretty blown away if you came out with a card game that just made me never want to play Magic again.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's not to say that all I want to do is play Magic, but if Magic Arena is giving me the option to unlock entire decks, and not just a couple, because in the previous iterations, like through duels and stuff, you could unlock starter decks, but I can't remember exactly how many there were, but there were only a few full decks that you could actually unlock and use. In Magic the Gathering Arena, they literally unlock a deck for you for every single mono and dual color combination. So that's like a huge number of cards that you get for free. It's something that – so just – I was telling John this earlier today, actually. What they do is when you log in and you play a game, it'll give you like – it'll always give you at least one reward just for playing a game. It doesn't matter if you win or lose. It'll just, some days it'll be a card, some days it'll be a booster pack, and then some days it'll say, come back tomorrow, like after you've played your game and you've gotten your reward, it'll say, come back tomorrow and you'll unlock a new deck. And then you're like, holy shit, like, I'm just going to log in and play one game and you're going to give me 45 cards or however many are in the deck without the mana. And the other day, yesterday, I was logging in because I knew that if I played, I'd get my deck. And then it said on there, like, win one game to unlock the remaining decks. I played one game and I unlocked 5 decks.
Wow.
Yeah, it was awesome. It made me feel good as a player just because I'm like, okay, sweet. Like, I put some time into this and I unlocked a shit ton of cards. Like, yeah. Now that I have every deck unlocked. So to have a game like Magic the Gathering, who already has a really good foothold in the community and everything, and then to have, like, Valve just being like, fuck it, we'll do it live, let's see how this goes, you know? Like, it's surprising to me that they're that confident in their game that they think that they're going to get people to shell out that kind of cash just to play.
Well, and I mean, I feel like they had to come into this prepared, you know, for the, like, with a plan for that, right? Like, they have to know what they're doing. Mm-hmm. So they must feel pretty confident, which is itself kind of scary because there's that many people out there that are going to be willing to spend it. And I don't want this to set some sort of new standard.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest thing that I'm worried about.
Microtransactions are already bad.
Yeah, if Valve sets the precedent to make games like this moving forward, then, like, oh my God, who knew Valve was the next enemy?
Yeah,
like,
well... They're a behemoth. That's
but
for
we're
sure.
Already looking at Diablo Immortal mobile. Mm-hmm. We're looking at Valve Artifact, and then
Bethesda's got that Elder Scrolls mobile.
Yeah, dude, this shit's getting out of control.
I mean, as soon as
grab your pitchforks.
As soon as these studios, you know, they make hits because, you know, that's the way to achieve success. And then once the hits start becoming more easy, then how do you keep growing? Well, and as soon as you're part of, you know, massive publicly traded companies and stuff, they're going to be taking advantage of the easiest path to make that revenue, right? And so the microtransactions, the crappy mobile games, yeah, I mean, we're going to see all the brands and games that we love eventually go that way.
Yeah, we're going to be like playing like an open world game, and we have to pay $2 for every door we want to open.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, you have some holdouts, right? Like, who are the people that make The Witcher?
CD Projekt
Red.
Yes,
CD Projekt Red. You know, they've said they're committed to making good games, right? Even after their success, that people want to, that they can buy once, and even their DLC is like a whole other game.
Dude, right? I do want to pick up that Gwent looking game that just, I think it just
Gwent?
Came out. No, it's not Gwent. It's it almost looks like it almost looks like Pyre, kind of. You do, like, the combat is card-based, but you run around in this, like, beautiful, over, like, it looks like an illustrated kind of isometric kind of thing. But then you make decisions as this queen in the Witcher universe. I'll look up what that thing's called, but that looks interesting. And I actually wish that it was on mobile, but I kind of wish I had a tablet for a game like that. I think this would be too small. But that's on PlayStation, so I've been thinking about picking that up, but... Same story. I got too much to play right now.
Yep,
so
yep.
Probably save that for the holiday or something.
Well, yeah. So then the other thing that complicates this game, it's sort of the final topic on Artifact, is that it has a real money auction house for buying and selling your cards.
Weird.
So that, you know, that sort of remains to be seen how well that will work. Sort of seems like the last time something like this was attempted, it didn't go very well. With the Diablo 3 auction house, I ended up having to scrap it. Blizzard did. So we'll see. Major concerns there are just, you know, Valve has ultimate control over this, and since it's all digital, they can do or undo as much as they want and change these cards after the fact, so... If people are spending real money or getting real money and things change after the fact, I don't know. It seems like it's just ripe for a lot of disappointment.
Yeah, you pay like $10 for a legendary card and then they patch it on Tuesday or something and now your card's worthless. Like, what do you say at that point? Oh, well.
Well, and you also have so they're going to have to be really careful about, if this is successful and they, you know, go for years, they're going to have to be careful about how they rotate things out of standard.
Mm-hmm.
And that they keep allowing formats and encourage those formats for older cards, right? Because you look at the market for, like, Magic cards today, there's a huge market for older cards and stuff because, you know, beyond just collectors, there are still people who play decks with all sorts of cards from all sets. But it's because the formats of those plays have been encouraged, but also because those formats have mostly been stood up by the community, right? It's not like Wizards or Magic before Wizards, like, created all these huge play types, right? It's the community came up with them. And in a digital game like this, you don't really have that ability necessarily. So for people to be able to spend money on this stuff, they have to continue to provide some worth for those cards after they rotate out of standard play.
Yeah, it's easier to provide a lot of, like, starter decks or something, and then do something like in Hearthstone, where they're like, okay, these cards are basically worthless mm-hmm. now. And, you know, that sucks. But at the same time, if they gave you the majority of those cards, it's easy to fall back on them just saying, like, well, we're just moving on in a new direction. We gave you all most of those cards for free anyway, so it's not a big deal.
Yeah, that's true.
But if you're paying for every single card that mm-hmm. you're using, it's like, these better always work. I need to always be able to put
these. And maybe they won't implement the same rotation that other games do. I mean, I feel like they have to if they want to keep releasing new content. But maybe they have some other plan for that. No, I don't know.
So, I may as well say this now. So that Witcher game, I bring it up because it's a... It is actually a Gwent game. It's not Gwent-like. It is Gwent.
Mm-hmm. Is it like a DLC to Gwent or something?
No, so I just looked up this Polygon article from yesterday. I didn't realize this. So apparently GOG Gaming, GOG.com, is owned by CD Projekt Red. I never knew that.
I did not know that either.
Nope. So apparently they originally planned on exclusively releasing this game on GOG, but then at the last minute decided to put it on Steam, which... You know, they said that sales expectations weren't reached. So they ended up putting it out on Steam. But that said, the reception, like all the reviews and stuff, were positive. But this says it took Gwent and made a 30-hour campaign out of it. So I probably will end up getting this, I bet. This says that the release for console, both consoles, is, or PS4 and Xbox One anyway, are it's coming out on December 4th. So I'll probably see if people like that and then probably pick it up because I'm really into bite-sized gaming right now. So something like that really appeals to me. So it's not mobile, but that is another card game if somebody's looking for something new.
Sweet. So it is just Gwent?
Yeah.
But another layer? Or
yeah, so it's Gwent, and then there's an actual campaign where you're making decisions, say Witcher style.
Oh.
So, you know, I assume it's shit like, do you burn down the village or do you spare them? Stuff like that.
Awesome.
Lots of card games out there right now.
Well, hopefully an example of something that can really compete with Artifact. We're going to take a quick break and we'll catch you when we come back.
Hello, this is Ray from the Heroes Podcast Network. And I am here to tell you about Screen Heroes. Do you love superheroes? What about superheroes in film and TV? How about weird rankings like top five lists or maybe three people just arguing about top five lists? Either way, we are the podcast for you. Check us out every Tuesday night live on Twitch. Or subscribe to Screen Heroes Podcast on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and Google Play. Now, back to your regularly scheduled podcast.
All right. So, next item was, I found this interesting. This may just be rumor yet. Well, it is just rumor yet because it's not confirmed by Microsoft. But that they are potentially developing as the next... Xbox hardware, a diskless console. Yes, and I'm really very sure to say. Very sure to say that properly.
A dicklix. Oh my god!
Nailed it.
I'm just gonna move on. I'm not even trying to say that.
Feels like that was
can't
on purpose.
Fake to it. Yeah.
A diskless console without disc. So I find that really interesting because it's basically the culmination of the vision that they originally set out with on this this generation, quote unquote, for the original Xbox One. I don't know if you guys remember the
oh yeah
crazy want to burn down everything Microsoft when they made their first announcements. It'd have the always-on connection.
Oh, yeah, the DRM and all that stuff. Which is funny now, like, there are a lot of games that you can only play connected to the internet. Like, even Hitman, which is, like, only a single-player game.
Yeah.
You basically have to be connected to the internet.
Well, and it was going to be much more digital game-focused. Mm-hmm. Right? And it would have allowed them to do much more creative things with things like a lot more play anywhere. Right? Xbox and PC, buy it once. They would have been able to do a lot more creative deals with digital games because they weren't tied to also having to work around physical games.
And it was, still would have had a 500 gig hard drive.
Yes, probably. But I honestly, in hindsight, I think what they were trying to do was probably awesome. But now we're going to get this sort of the half version, which is fine. They're working their way back towards it.
Feel like I try to get all my games digital anyway.
I hate swapping discs. Yeah, I hate it so much. I will pay a premium. And I say premium because the physical games go on sale much more readily. But I'll go ahead and pay full price for the digital version, just because I don't even want to go to the store to buy it. I don't even want to go on Amazon to buy it. I just want it to start downloading immediately. And if you do it like for Xbox, if you do it through the store and everything, you can have it start, you know, you can log into your account, have it start downloading even if you're not home. You know, it's ready for you when you want to go home and play.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the coolest thing. Like logging in while you're at work or something and getting your game started installing and then
play it first thing when you get home. Man, there's nothing worse than being like, oh shit, new Overwatch watch patch just dropped. I can't wait to play this new gate or this new character. And then there's a system update, and then there's an app update.
Oh, my gosh.
And even with fast internet, it's like, dude, it's my time.
Mike, did you see my screenshot of how fast Red Dead was installing?
No. Oh, wow.
256 megabits.
Not bad.
It only took, like, half an hour to download or something.
Wow.
Yeah. That's 80, crazy. 87 gigs of Red Dead.
It took Lizzie over 2.5 days.
Oh,
her internet's not the...
No Google Fiber, huh?
She has the most basic option, so it's like 2 megabits.
Yep. Yeah. Wow. Oh, man.
It's free, so...
Yeah, that's, can't beat that.
That's when I might buy the physical copy.
Yeah. Well, I think even with this game, you're gonna put the disc in, and it's just going to download it all anyway.
Yeah.
Was it Fallout 76 where there was only like 200 megs on the disc itself?
There's a disc for it?
Well, I don't know, for the physical version.
I saw something. I can't remember if it was a joke or not, but it was like a disc and it opened it up and it was just a code for for something like that. So I don't know if that was a joke.
There was one game recently that had a pretty big install size, and the only thing on the disc for, this was a console game, was basically just the install so it could start the download. Yeah. So.
What a waste.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? What a waste. And the prices for that are going to go up and down so much. Yep. It's going to all be a bunch of BS. Anyway, I thought it was interesting. That's supposed to be for 2019, so we'll see what happens.
Yeah. I'm interested to see how this plays into anything with the holiday season. Because, like, of course, it's just a rumor right now. But, you know, I wonder if that's something that they would release during what used to be a drought of the first quarter. You know, when there aren't a lot of games coming out. But honestly, that drought doesn't really exist anymore because games are always coming out in that first quarter now. I mean, last year, there was Horizon. Well, no, Horizon was 2 years ago. I don't know. But Horizon and I think Breath of the Wild came out during that first quarter. So, like, where there used to be, like, 3 months after the holiday season where fucking nothing's coming out. Not really.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly not your big titles. Well, now everybody's like, well, there's so much going on throughout the entire year that we'd be stupid not to use this. So it's nice that that stuff comes out consistently. You don't just have a drought like that. But I'm interested to see how Microsoft will approach this, if this is real, if that's something they announce during that first quarter, depending on the sales, the huge number of sales and deals and all that stuff that are going around this Black Friday and then for Christmas. Because that stuff's interesting, because every time, you know, stocks always change when they make a big thing like that. And, you know, maybe they keep it rumored for a long, long time until they've got something to actually show, because we know how people like to get upset. So
I think they usually show off their hardware at E3, if I recall correctly. I think every year they have a big.
Yeah, I think you're right.
A big conference, and like the S and the X both were revealed there. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that. Yeah, yeah. I think the X one X was as well. Yeah, because I definitely remember them showing off the original Expo.
Which I don't know when E3 is, but I would assume in the summer.
It's like the second or third. I think it's the third weekend in June, okay. Usually.
There you go.
Because right after my trip, I usually miss a bunch of it, actually. but that's going on. You know, I don't think we wrote it down to talk about it, but Sony is not going to be at E3 this next year.
Oh,
okay. They already announced that, which is a very unusual move because they canceled this year's PlayStation Experience or whatever the show is. Mm-hmm. That would be in the first week of December,
mm-hmm.
But they canceled that. So
what? Where's their platform to show stuff off then?
We don't know yet. It seemed like when they didn't do, they announced, this was a while ago, they announced that they weren't going to do that December thing. I know there, you could usually go up to, there's like a theater or something in Harrah's or something up north where you could go and you'd pay a ticket like you're seeing a movie and you go in and Sony's there with a bunch of cool shit and... you get to, with everyone else in the room, watch this experience that everyone else is seeing online everywhere. But I think that's the only way you can see it. I think you have to buy a ticket. You can't just watch anywhere for free. Anyway, that's what they did. This year they announced that they weren't going to do that because they just didn't have enough to show, which people complained last year that they didn't have enough to show. So this time they were like, well, we'll just not do it, you know, which is just fine. You know, no reason to have just another okay show experience in the same era of the year. Like, honestly, the Game Awards has a bunch of stuff that comes out with it. I mean, they're the awards, but then there are usually some cool announcements and a lot of cool game trailers and stuff like that. So they announced that they weren't going to do the PlayStation Experience, but then also now, so far in advance, to announce that they're not doing E3, and they're not doing anything around E3. I think it was Microsoft that said, we're leaving E3, and then they posted up, like, across the street.
Yep.
You know, it's like, okay, well, great. And then, you know, Nintendo, when they pulled out E3 years ago, they started doing their Nintendo Directs, which I think are wonderful. It makes a lot more sense to them or to their business model and stuff. Honestly, if PlayStation did that, I think they would be smart. I think that would be a good decision because right now they have a lot in their favor as far as, like, exclusive games. I mean, you look at God of War, you look at... Well, a bunch of them. I forget. But they're Marvel, the Spider-Man game. They're just a bunch of exclusive Sony games out right now. And while they retain those exclusive rights to that stuff, I think they'd be smart to just have their own Nintendo Direct, basically, rather than having some big, you know, paid ticket event. So anyway, I don't know what's all going to happen with all that stuff, but that's remarkable. It definitely is a big move for how big Sony is. It raised questions. It seems like Nintendo might actually go back to E3. I saw that somewhere, but I'd have to wait to, you know, see if that turns out that way. Because Nintendo's been out of there for a while now. But also, like, on the show floor, Sony had so much physical representation there that, like, if they're dropping out, that's a huge change. Like, that... I mean, that's a huge change we wouldn't see on, like, the live stream and stuff and in the conferences, but that would be a huge change. And E3 is just a weird thing anyway. They recently started, a couple of years ago, started letting just anybody in. You could buy a ticket instead of just industry personnel.
Ugh.
So, like, I don't have any – I like watching E3, but I have no interest in going. I would way rather go to, like, a player-centric or a dev-centric event like PAX where you can really demo some cool stuff. I would much
rather go to PAX.
Yeah, me too. And every year the whole big crew at Giant Bomb, both their studios, goes there, and they always come back with all sorts of stories of, like, stuff that happened, but also how things have changed from year to year. And it just, E3 is in just a weird spot. It's been around for almost 25 years now. I think it's 25 years this year. It's been around for a while, but it's gone through a lot of changes, and it's just done a lot of weird stuff over the years. So who knows? I don't know what Sony's going to do next, and who knows if this means really big changes for E3. It's kind of hard to figure out what E3 is now. Like, not now just because of the Sony thing, but just every year it moves in a weird direction. So it's hard to tell who is you know, who's steering that ship.
Yep.
So anyway, we'll see.
That's well, we know one thing. It's not Sony.
It's not Sony. actually, SEO, Sony Interactive, SIO, online.
Sony Entertainment.
Sony Entertainment online. Yeah. They are on the board that runs E3. I forget what it's called. It's like the ESL or something. Electronic software or something. I could be messing that up, but I think it's the ESL. They are the ones who make E3 happen. Mm-hmm. So since Sony's on there, but they're not even going to be, you know. At the time when the articles that I read were written, the ESL didn't make a comment about anything. So I don't know what that means, but that's just another reason why it's weird. Because it's like, who's behind the scenes anyway?
That is interesting.
It'd be funny if Sony stayed on there, but didn't show
up. Didn't show up, yeah.
They just like, they're trying to make it shitty.
Yeah, throw the grenade on their way out.
Well, we have a punch list of a few items to get through here. First is Game Awards nominations. So they're out.
Yeah, boy.
You can vote on their website, I think once a day. The Game of the Year contenders are probably exactly what you would expect. Usual suspects there.
The Game of the Year ones are real easy. It's Assassin's Creed, God of War, Marvel Spider-Man, Monster Hunter World, and Red Dead 2. But it's also Celeste, which I'm happy to see an indie up there. That's a really good game.
I have not heard of Celeste.
Oh, man. Go listen to the soundtrack, dude.
It's on a lot of lists on here.
It's great. Well, it deserves it.
Have you played it?
I haven't played it, but I've watched some gameplay of it. It's one of those, like, I'm watching it. Like, mm-hmm. I haven't bought it yet, but I know I will at some point.
Yeah. Dude, I listened to that soundtrack for a long time before I picked it up.
It looks like, based on some of the gameplay that I've seen, it looks like it has a little bit of Super Meat Boy to it.
Mm-hmm. It was well, that made would not by, be for me,
but...
Well, I'm not a big fan of Super Meat Boy, but it's made by Matt Does Games, I think. Mm-hmm. Matt Makes Games. Same person who made Towerfall Ascension, and you can tell. See, all you do, you can jump, you can dash in a direction while you're in the air, but you only get one. And then there are a ton of mechanics throughout the game that constantly make everything feel fresh. Mm-hmm. You never feel like you're just doing the same thing, really, ever. I don't think one time in the whole game I felt like, okay, I get this now. I don't need to do this anymore. It's just constantly new puzzles and tons of hidden stuff. What I'll probably do is I'll end up beating that game here soon, and then I'll set it down for a while, and then I'll go back and try to hunt for, like, that would be a fun game to 100%, but that game ain't easy. You know, that game's pretty hard, but it's got this cool feature where it's got, like, an assist mode, so if you just want to get through the thing, like, you're tired of it, like, if I give this to Lizzie, she was like, she had told her, or, you know, when I had said, hey, do you want to play this, she said, no, that looks way too hard, and I'm like, it is hard, but they want people to have a good time with this, so all you have to do is press this assist button, and it'll get you through this one screen, you know, so if you're only stuck on one bullshit thing, and you know how to do it, you just can't do it.
Yeah.
Well, we want you to have fun, so it skips you to the next place. Yeah, it's cool, because if you want it to be hard, it's hard.
Yeah.
If you just want to see the story and listen to the soundtrack and see the great art style, cool. You know, it doesn't hold you back because it's trying to, you know, it's up its own ass trying to just be hard for hard's sake.
That's cool.
Yeah, so that one's great. Very highly recommended, that one.
Well, we'll probably do a little bit more of our own kind of Game of the Year nominations at some point before the end of the year. Spoiler alert, mine's probably going to be Rocket League for like the fifth year running.
We'll put you in charge of the ongoing game. Yeah,
best ongoing game, yeah.
And it's just Rocket League five times in a row.
I don't understand why it's not on this list.
Best game that makes me feel worthless.
That's so true, though. Best game I'm awful at, but I keep coming back to it. Because so many games I'm really bad at it, I don't want to play it. I just put it down and I walk away. Okay, next was one little news tidbit that Thomas brought. Nintendo?
Oh, yeah. Reggie Fils-Aimé, Mr. Nintendo of America president himself, all 18 feet tall of himself. He gave an interview to Kotaku Australia, and one thing that he said was basically the classic N64 is not anywhere on the horizon. They have put, I mean, you can see this, he didn't say this, but you can see that they trademarked a new logo and something that looks like the three-pronged N64 controller. But Reggie was very clear that they have no plan at all of doing that anytime soon. His explanation was that the NES and the SNES were intended to bridge the gap between the Wii U and the Switch, mm-hmm. which makes sense. And they were powerhouses. I mean, they're making a lot of money. So they would be foolish not to do an N64. But if they know it's going to be successful and they don't need it right now, I think it's smart for them to just hold on to it. Because anytime that they have a gap, they can throw that in there with wild success.
Maybe so, with the extra time they have, they can make more than like 100 of them.
Yeah.
Nope. If it's still Nintendo, they will still have hardware shortages.
I don't have either of them yet, but I definitely would see myself getting the NES or the SNES Classic. Just because, I don't know, even though we all own those games in other ways and they're playable, it's just, you know, something about sitting down in front of that hardware. But, and the games are different enough, right? Like, they're older iterations of some of the games we're still playing, but they're also some different games. Whereas, to me, it just feels like the Nintendo 64 games are mostly the same things we're playing now. Just older versions.
Just and, real shitty
yeah.
graphics.
Yeah, it's like they just iterated.
Blah, 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 1.0.
Yeah, I mean, they've just iterated on those same games again and again. And I don't really feel the need to, like, go back and play the crappier version.
I feel like...
we've got new Mario Parties, new Mario Karts.
Yeah.
We've got Mega Man 11. You know, I've never played a Mega Man game in my life, but it sounds like 11's pretty good. So I don't really need to go back and play the first one.
If Tony Hawk is on there, I'll buy it. that's like the only requirement that, just, that I
wouldn't
have.
Wouldn't that be on like a PlayStation? Oh, that wasn't 64.
Yeah,
it was
yeah they, that's they how I played it. Yeah, Tony Hawk Pro Skater Underground.
Yeah. Well, so I wouldn't be too disappointed if it didn't show up.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not in a big hurry to buy that stuff. Yeah. It's cool nostalgia factor, but that would make someone else very happy.
I think one thing that really is actually a bigger draw for the N64 Classic over the SNES and the NES Classic is just if you think about Raspberry Pis, right? So everybody has a friend that has Raspberry Pi, Raspberry Pi emulator, where they've got all of the games, like all the NES, all SNES, all Sega Genesis, whatever. But the Raspberry Pi, the hardware is so crappy that like sometimes it does have some trouble running the N64 games. And I know that there's some guides out there that'll help you kind of tweak your Raspberry Pi to try to increase the performance. But even at the end of the day, there's still going to be some games that just struggle on it. So I feel like they could make a lot more money from just the people that don't want to mess with it anymore. Mm-hmm. That actually would have more of a draw than the other two, I think. But again, I do agree with your point about how like N64 is, compared to SNES and NES, N64 is still great in its own way, but not something I would go back to quite as much as NES or SNES. I don't know why they have just a higher nostalgia factor for me.
Because the N64 has like a few, it has, you know, Mario 64,
mm-hmm.
and it has Tony Hawk, but other systems had that. And so like as far as exclusives go, like the N64 is when stuff started to show up on multiple consoles, mainly PlayStation and N64. So at that point, stuff wasn't Nintendo exclusive. So if you only look at Nintendo exclusives, N64 only has like 5 games that I'd want to play. I, you know, where NES and SNES, a lot of those were only on those platforms. That's it. You know, so there was a higher number of those kind of games.
Yeah.
So if you want to go back and play those, that's the way you're going to play them. But with N64, I could find a backwards compatibility or look at one of the subscription models that the big three are into these days, where you could probably pay $10 a month or something and then play those PlayStation 1 era games like Tony Hawk, probably. So I don't know. It's just a weird thing, but honestly, I think they're smart one way or another for holding on to that. Because if they think it'll be as successful as I think it'll be, may as well sit on it while you're, you know, still pulling people into the Switch and the Switch is continuing to grow.
I agree. All right. Well, why don't we jump into our question? Last week was what gaming promo would you like to see? I'd mentioned I would really like it if I could, you know, like get a Hearthstone pack with my sandwich purchase. Mm-hmm. I was curious, have we seen any real promos for things like Overwatch loot boxes or Fortnite V-Bucks or whatever at like McDonald's or anything? Said it?
Isn't like Pringles right now? You buy some Pringles and you get like an Overwatch loot box. It was one of you who told me that, or maybe I read that online. But yeah, there's some food you can buy right now and get like 5 loot boxes. Huh. Good.
I like Pringles. I like loot boxes. I like
Pringles too.
Still haven't opened any.
Yeah.
I don't know. Obviously, the Star Wars ones are pretty straightforward.
If you could get some new, like, Katamari DLC, like, matched in with your purchase at, like, your local head shop or something, that would be that would be a good one.
Have you guys seen the new Tetris Effect game?
I very little.
So, it's Tetris.
Yeah.
But it's just, like, trippy as hell. It got stuff going on in the background where you're like, whoa. So really, that'd be the one. You'd go to your local head shop and they'd be like, oh, hey, we got if you spend at least $25, you get a free video game.
Dispensary.
I remember.
Dude, that would be funny if somebody took a bunch of these just stoner games and like brought them all together and then approached these entities and were like, yo.
Humble stoner bundle.
Yeah. Yeah. I would subscribe to that.
Partnered with Cheetos.
Yeah. Taco Bell.
Yeah.
It's got to be Taco Bell.
It's got to be Taco Bell. If you buy at least like one of those party boxes, you walk home with a video game.
Yeah. Well, the game that restaurants don't want to promote is Overcooked. This is not us. All right. So then our question for this week, pretty simple. What game do you think should win Game of the Year? It doesn't have to be on the list or any sort of award. Something, you know, for a game that you like that it hasn't been recognized or isn't getting the recognition that you think it deserves, like Rocket League.
Yeah. Or it could just be what is your personal game of the year that you've played? So it could have come out in 2015.
Yeah.
Like,
what are you finally getting caught up on?
Well, I do like the best ongoing game category because, like, you know, we looked at it for the show and fucking No Man's Sky's on there.
Why is it on there?
Because they came out with a bunch of quality of life updates. And
yeah, but still.
This is the industry trying to, you know, give them some credit after tearing them apart on the original release. Yeah.
So that thing exists, but that's the only way you can really recognize a game that continues to put out that support is to have a category like this. Because, like, is No Man's Sky going to win that category? Boy, I sure hope not.
Yeah, but I mean, that's like
it's probably gonna be Destiny.
That's like congratulating the studio who was like, yeah, this is nothing like what we intended to do, but we kind of started to kind of fix it. It's still nothing like what everyone intended it to be, but because we worked on it a little bit, we're cool, right?
Yeah, we're good.
Well, everything's fine.
So that's going
on. Can we move it back up to $59.99?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Go full price for all this free
DLC.
If we play
it, you have to pay $1 to land on any
planet. Yeah. Yeah.
So that's – but, like, I would even – this probably wouldn't be my actual winner, but, like, Darkest Dungeon with all those quality of life updates that are on there now? Shit. Put that on that category because I'm very happy with the way they're upkeeping that game.
I mean, aren't there some really old games still getting content updates? Like, really old? Like World of Warcraft old? No, I'm kidding. That was a joke. Yeah, I know. Like RuneQuest or RuneScape. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, I keep seeing ads for RuneScape Mobile. Yeah. And I'm like, get out of here, Jagex. I ain't playing this.
I thought you were looking for mobile games.
I'm not trying to lose my job.
Look, so if you look at this ongoing game list, I don't see a single MUD on here.
I thought we were going to say something about Rocket League.
No, I don't see a single Rocket League on here.
Single MUD?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Like, they still release text-based
games?
MUD.
Oh, the greatest games. Dungeons,
they're like the original MMOs.
Oh.
Let's talk about Darkness Falls.
Bonus episode. We could talk about it for a whole episode. I'm surprised we haven't yet.
Yeah, I'm going to get into Darkness Falls sometime soon. I won't do it right now.
So you've never played a MUD?
I played Hobo Wars on a browser back in like
that doesn't
seventh
sound right.
grade.
That doesn't sound
It was
right.
a bad game. It was wonderful.
Okay.
It's a bad game. This is the game where like you're standing in a room and text is describing what the room is to you and you can go north, south, east, west.
Yeah, well, I mean, I understand the idea of it. I don't think I have played one, though.
It was super fun. I met my first girlfriend in Darkness.
Let's save that story. We should save that story.
Oh my gosh.
We should save that story.
That'll be a holiday bonus.
Let's kick this. Let's launch right back into Darkness Falls next week because I want to get the whole glory of this in the episode.
I dig it.
All right. Well, I think that's all we had for today. So thanks for joining us and enjoy our outro.
Thanks, guys.
See ya.
Gamer Heroes is part of the Heroes Podcast Network and hosted by GGKC. You can find our episodes at heroespodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spreaker, and tons of other podcast apps. Follow us online at Gamer Heroes Pod and at GG_Kansas_City on Twitter or at Heroes Podcasts on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitch. You can also find us on GGKC Facebook page and our website gg-kc.com. To all you gamers out there, play nice, play well, and play again. See you next week.